I have a couple things. You ready? Okay. I'll pass this around if you guys want to look at it. This is actually from the Church of Scientology, so you guys can pass it around and look at it. It'd be nice and fun. So. Okay, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to show you... There's a cartoon that actually made fun of Scientology a little bit ago, but almost everything they made fun of was actually not making fun, it was actually what they do. So I'm going to show you a couple of clips as we go through this, because it actually might help you to understand some stuff that goes on. So here's my first clip as we start.
What do I have to do?
Have you heard of Scientology? It's all based on the book Dianetics. A lot of really cool people are Scientologists, like Tom Cruise and John Travolta. Why don't you come on in and we'll get your fun free personality test started? Let's just find an empty room here. Lots of people getting free tests today. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Kelly, how's it going?
Great, I want you to meet my new friend Stan.
Hey there, how are you?
Fine.
Brian's going to give you your personality test and then let you know some things about Scientology.
Good times, good times.
Look, is this a religion? Because my family is, like, Catholic or something.
Oh, that's not a problem at all. Scientology is more of an alternative to psychology than a religion.
Then how come that sign says Church of Scientology?
Oh, that's just his thing. What's the Denver Broncos record now? 6-2?
7-2.
Wow, that's great. All right, come on in and take a seat. We're going to have some fun. All right, now I'm just going to ask you a few questions. Just answer these questions as truthfully as you can, all right? Okay. Number one, do you ever make remarks which you later regret?
Sure.
Uh-huh. Would you rather give orders than take them?
Yeah.
Do you ever whistle just for the fun of it? Okay, and finally, does life sometimes feel vague and confusing to you?
Yes.
Okay, Stan, well, that's it. That's the end of the personality test.
So how'd I do?
Well, I hate to tell you this, Stan, but you are one messed up kid.
Huh?
Yeah, I'm afraid that you are completely miserable and totally depressed.
I am? I didn't know that.
Well, there's certainly no question that you are a perfect candidate for Scientology. I think it can really make you happy again.
Well, what do I do?
It's very simple. We just need $240.
Wrong way, what do I do? Oh, there we go, sorry. Actually, what this is called is the tone scale. When they take that personality test, I'll talk about that in a little bit, but it's called the tone scale. Here we go. I don't have even a lot of scripture to talk to you about tonight, because they don't really use scripture that they twist. It's just very bizarre. Let's pray and we'll get going. Father, thank you so much for being a God who reveals the truth to us, for loving us the way that you do, and knowing that we are a people who are messed up, and yet you have come to redeem and to save us. And it's not something we do, that we are not the answer, but you are the answer. So thanks for being that. Amen. All right. The first thing I'm going to tell you is it's almost impossible to figure out what is actually true in regard to the founder of L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology, his life. He almost never told the truth. His son is quoted as saying, "I would say that 99% of what my father has written about his own life is false." So it's very, very hard. So with that in mind, just go with me and I'll give you as best I can. The Church of Scientology was founded in 1954 based upon the teachings of L. Ron Hubbard. He was born March 13th, 1911, died January 24th, 1968, actually near San Luis Obispo. 86, sorry. I got distracted by the door opening. So these are some stuff that L. Ron Hubbard has written from his own biography, so I'll give you these and see what you think. He's the son of a naval commander. He moved to Montana at the age of two and traveled with his family over much of the country. His mother had attended a teacher's college, so she tutored him at home, and he learned to read and write at a very young age. He likes to think of himself as a prodigy. As a young boy, Hubbard established a friendship with the tribe of Blackfoot Indians near his Helena, Montana home. And this unique opportunity allowed him to learn much about the culture, customs, and legends of the tribe. At age six, he said, Hubbard was given the rare honor of becoming a blood brother of the Blackfoot Indians. Now, this is interesting because the Blackfoot Indian, the reservation was about 100 miles away from their home, and the Blackfoot Indians do not conduct blood brother ceremonies. So it's more Hollywood legend than truth. In 1923, Hubbard and his family moved to Seattle, Washington, and he joined the Boy Scouts. They said at age 13, he became the youngest Eagle Scout ever. It's actually true. He did become an Eagle Scout at the age of 13, but 12 other boys also became Eagle Scouts at the age of 13 that year. And so they actually, the Scouts did not keep a record of who was the youngest. It's great. The same year, he traveled to Washington, D.C. by way of the Panama Canal. Along the way, he made a relationship with a naval commander named Joseph C. Thompson. Joseph C. Thompson had been sent by the U.S. Marine Corps to study under Sigmund Freud, and so he taught Hubbard all about Freudian theory, which is always great as a young kid. Really, I used to have a friend like this when I was growing up, who everything you do, he was like, oh, yeah, I've done that. Oh, I know how it is. And, you know, we're like 12. And he's like, oh, I've done that. I don't know how to do this. He had this little cheap computer in the back of his house. Oh, I could hack into the school and we could change all of our grades. And he's not hooked up to a phone line or a modem line or a Cat 5 cable or anything. He's like, but I can do it. I don't want to. It had like a tape drive. You put a tape in it, push play, and it loads what. This is how bad it was. But he's like, oh, I could do this. He once watched War Games one too many times or something. But it reminds me totally of L. Ron Hubbard. Anyway, sorry. Okay. In 1927, it says that he embarked on his first of many journeys to Asia. By the age of 19, he had traveled more than 250,000 miles, and he went to China, Japan, Guam, and the Philippines. In the course of these travels, he says he was befriended by Old Mayo, who was a Beijing magician, and he spent time in Buddhist lamasseries and in the Western Hills of China, and spent time in nomadic bands of Mongolian descent. So he spends time with these people learning all about their customs and their religion and all that stuff. Sounds like Goonies Part 2. Kind of to me. But so for all the wonders of these lands and all the stuff he encountered, he still saw all the stuff that actually concerned him, nothing that actually solved mankind's problems. Nothing stopped the misery of the human condition. So in 1929, he returned to the United States. So he spent a whole 2 years probing the depths of Eastern theology. Comes back to the United States, resumes his formal education. He graduates from the Woodward School for Boys in Washington, D.C., and then he enrolls in mathematics engineering program at George Washington University. In 1957, his book comes out called All About Radiation. And in the dust jacket of this book, it takes a quote from the book that says, "We have the sane and sober views of a medical doctor on the physical facts and the consequences of the actual atomic blast and the diseases resulting from it." Okay, so this is inside the book. And then the publisher wrote this: "L. Ron Hubbard, who was one of the first nuclear physicists in the United States, has interpreted these facts and related them to human livingness, governments, and the control of populations." So that's on the original dust jacket of the book. Makes these claims that he's both a nuclear physicist and also a medical doctor. L. Ron Hubbard actually flunked out of the only course he ever took in nuclear physics, and his grade point average was so low when he was in college that he dropped out altogether. Anyway, so in the course of his study, he theorized that there are subatomic particles that might assist people in how the human mind actually works. And so he recognized these as of great importance in helping to keep mankind actually under control in light of the atomic studies that he had studied. Scientologists say this: "Thus, the result of Hubbard's many travels, experiences, and studies was a determination to discover how the human mind works." Hubbard left college, that's so nice, before graduating and made the world his research laboratory. It's not, he got kicked out because he couldn't handle it. His research at this time was actually financed by him going around the world. He actually, in the 1930s, published 200 books. So the guy just writes incredibly fast. These books are in science fiction and westerns and mystery and adventure. So he sells a ton of books and actually help him pay to go over the world and do all the stuff that he says he does. In 1938, L. Ron Hubbard discovered what he believed the common denominator of existence. And this is the word survive. And we'll talk about this in a little bit, how all these things come about. Everything has to deal with the whole idea of surviving. He wrote a work called Excalibur. And in that, and when I read this, sometimes it sounds really bizarre and hard to understand. This is exactly how he wrote, so I'm just going to read it to you. He goes, "I suddenly realized that survival was the pin on which you could hang the rest of this with adequate and ample proof. It's a very simple problem, idiotically simple. That's why it never got solved. Nobody has ever looked at anything being that simple to do that much." So it's like, what are you even talking about? I don't know. "So what do we find as the simplicities of the solution? The simplicities of the solution lie in this, that life, all life, is trying to survive, and life is composed of two things, the material universe and an X factor, and this X factor is something that can evidently organize and mobilize the material universe." And you go, what? You go, exactly. Hubbard, in his own biography, then says this, Hubbard served as a Navy lieutenant in World War II. The bloodshed and its effects on man's mind that he observed made him more determined than ever to discover the answers to the human mind. Now, while he was actually in World War II, they will tell you that his greatest feat was actually he almost started a war with Mexico. He's actually doing some unauthorized gunnery exercises in Mexico, and he almost starts a war with them. Before serving him with a formal admonition and demoting him, his commanding officer made an effort to call Hubbard an idiot or incompetent in his report. This is what it says. Consider this officer lacking in the essential qualities of judgment, leadership, and cooperation. Not considered qualified for command or promotion at this time. Recommend duty on large vessel where he can be properly supervised. That's not what you want to hear about yourself as an officer. He wrote a book called My Philosophy that was published in 1965. And in this book, he claims that he had been in almost every major battle of World War II. He had won more medals than just about anyone. And what's actually true is he actually spent more time in the infirmary than anywhere else. He has this list of complaints that he does. These are like malaria, ulcers, conjunctivitis, headaches, depression, more conjunctivitis, foot problems, weakening of the vision, psychological trauma from hardcore combat, arthritis, bursitis, and this with calcification. All the way up to the 1950s, after World War II, he was still trying to get help from the VA for some of these things. In 1945, he is hospitalized at Oak Knoll Naval Hospital in Oakland, California, and he says that in this book, My Philosophy, he was blinded with injured optic nerves. Actually, if you look at the reports, he actually had pink eye. Injured optic nerves and lame with physical injuries to hip and back at the end of World War II. He says, I faced an almost non-existent future. And so while recovering, he says at this point, he took an opportunity to experiment with the idea that mental blocks can prevent medical treatments from actually being effective. So he found this theory, he says, to work in numerous patients, and he comes with this idea that thought is boss. What you think is what you are. Okay, so after the war, Hubbard then continues to go and test his hypothesis on a broad sample of people from all over the United States, is what he says. He said that he helped over 200 people with this whole idea of thought is boss, and these procedures came to be known as the book, eventually, Dianetics. You guys probably seen it on TV, like, oh, what page 137 answers this question? That's, I think. In 1949, he first published an article on Dianetics in the Explorers Club Journal. In May 1950, Dianetics, the Modern Science of Mental Health, was published, and it went on to sell over 17 million copies. 17 million. He wrote six books in 1951 on Dianetics technology, and then he begins to lecture all over the country. In 1952, he built the existing framework set on Dianetics and published a new set of teaching called Scientology, a Religious Philosophy. In 1953, Hubbard incorporated three churches, a Church of American Science, a Church of Scientology, and a Church of Spiritual Engineering in Camden, New Jersey. On February 18, 1954, with Hubbard's blessing, some other people set up what's called the first local Church of Scientology in a local area. And this was the Church of Scientology in California. And it says, adopting the aims and purposes, principles, and creed of the Church of American Science as founded by L. Ron Hubbard. Okay, so there's your first Church of a true Scientology, people taking those and actually kind of preaching those. The second Church of Scientology to be set up was, after the one in California, was in Auckland, New Zealand in 1955. In 1957, the Church of Scientology of California is granted tax-exempt status by the Internal Revenue Service, by the government. 1958, the year after that, the IRS started to review the appropriateness of that status for them. In 1959, a lot of information, right? This is great. 1959, Hubbard and his family moved to England, and he bought a place called St. Hill Manor in Sussex, which was to be his home for 7 years, and becomes the worldwide headquarters of the Church of Scientology. And at about around this time, Scientology starts using a device that they use called an e-meter. You'll come to places like this, if Scientology is around, you'll see this sign, I'll say, free stress test, come and use our e-meter. Okay? Should I clip now? Or? Okay, let me show you this video. This is part of the thing we were just watching earlier.
Michelle, our friend Stan wants to have auditing.
Oh, good for you. You're going to be so happy.
I hope so.
It's the beginning of a whole new life for you, Stan. See you afterwards.
Great. So do you have the $240?
Perfect. We're on our way.
Come on over here and I'll fill you in on how the Church of Scientology works. You see, Stan, Scientology was founded by a great man named L. Ron Hubbard. Mr. Hubbard discovered that negative emotions are actually caused by things called body thetans. Yes, and being the genius that he was, Mr. Hubbard invented a way to get rid of those bad thetans. This is called an e-meter. It's the main tool of Scientology. You just grab hold of these handles as I talk you through past experiences in your life. I'll be taking readings here, and we'll be able to determine your thetan levels.
Thetan levels?
Come on in the auditing room, and I'll show you how it works. All these people are just like you, Stan, auditing with e-meters to get rid of their negative emotions. All right, Stan, I want you to just relax and take hold of the e-meter handles.
So this is gonna make me happy?
Just take a few deep breaths, and I'll just get a base reading of your thetan levels.
Okay, so this is their thing that's called an e-meter. This is electropsychometer is what the e-meter stands for. They filed for a patent on June 7, 1965. It was granted on December 6, 1966. The e-meter passes a tiny current through your body. And these things, and I'll explain more of this later as we get to some other stuff. But what happens is you are all full of what's called these body thetans, and they confuse you from past traumatic experiences. And so this meter, what it allows them to do is see how full you are of these body thetans. They're called engrams. And so they test you and they work you through some of these. We have a picture of what this looks like. Oh. Okay, so here's John Travolta doing it. Okay. There's Lisa Marie Presley. Hey. See? Priscilla, whatever. Is that her name? Priscilla? Okay. Okay, so Priscilla Presley, she's doing it. So they start using this device, and they start calling this medical device. And in 1963, January 4th, the FDA actually raids the Office of the Church of Scientology, and they seize these e-meters as illegal medical devices. And since that time, the e-meters actually carry a disclaimer that say that they are a purely religious artifact. What happens, it looks like this, right? Do we do the... Yes, okay. So you get up and you hold on to these things, and you think about different things in your past that have happened to you. Maybe things you don't even know. Okay, and it's like, oh, the e-meter is going crazy. Do the next one. Okay, so you have someone there. Go, let me help you, and they help you go back to this past traumatic experience, and you figure it out, and you get rid of these. If you can ever get rid of all of these, then you become what's called clear. You're clear of all the body thetans, and you can now be an operating thetan. And we'll talk about what that means in a minute. Okay, in the mid-60s, the Church of Scientology was actually banned in several Australian states, starting with Victoria in 1965. In an Anderson report that they said that this is called auditing. This auditing process involved command hypnosis. And they said most Scientology and Dianetic techniques are those of authoritative hypnosis and as such are dangerous. So what they did was they banned the Church of Scientology. So what Scientology does is it actually changes their name to Church of the New Faith and starts operating that way. And then legal proceedings actually started at that point with the Church of Scientology, which they love to sue people, but in the end, they actually got it overturned, and I'll tell you when that happens in a minute. In the course of developing Scientology, Hubbard was always having all these different ideas about how things were supposed to take place. And really for the inner group of people in Scientology at that time, it really developed not into so much a belief of what he was saying, but unquestioning faith of L. Ron Hubbard. You had to follow this guy. On September 1st, 1966, Hubbard resigned as executive director of the Church of Scientology, and he spends the next 7 years at sea devoted to research. Now, during this time, it says he is developing drug rehabilitation programs, as well as the highest levels of Scientology and their principles. This is what documents are called OT3, Operating Thetan 3 levels, which I will also talk about in a minute, and hopefully all this will come into focus for you. So what they did is they had three large ships. This is the one that they have today. It's called the Free Winds. And this is nice, huh? This is their ship. If you're really high up, you get to hop on the ship, or you have enough money, you can hop on the ship and go with Scientologists out to do this. Now, during the time when he's actually on this boat, what he's actually doing is he's taking a whole bunch of drugs psychedelic drugs, and he becomes an addict for the rest of his life. In 1967, he wrote to his third wife, Mary Sue, and he says, on this boat, he says, I am drinking lots of rum and popping pinks and grays. It's like, okay. And this is where he comes up with the operating three levels. The C organization, he actually called the C org, which because he's very creative, I guess, in that. And so it's based on the three ships that they have. And again, while he's at sea, he comes up with what's called the operating thetan level three. And the materials for that. Okay. This is where you get the whole Xenu thing, which we'll talk about in just a minute. In 1967, the IRS actually removed Scientology's tax-exempt status, asserting that their activities were actually commercial activities and operated for the benefit of L. Ron Hubbard. And so the decision actually results in this whole litigation process that eventually gets settled in the church's favor, but it's the longest court battle in IRS history, lasting a quarter of a century. From 1975 to 1979, Hubbard lived in La Quinta, California, where he wrote, in many cases, directed numerous training films about how to help people get into Scientology and work with the principles in it. In 1980, he publishes a book called The Way to Happiness, a non-religious moral code based on common sense. 35 million copies have been printed of this book. Now, in this, Hubbard comments that it is the first moral code in the history of the universe based entirely on common sense. Now, he must really think he's great, right? In the entire universe. Okay. And so he says, by following the 21 precepts outlined in this revolutionary yet common sense approach to morality, entire communities can be transformed. So what are these? How about this? The way to happiness is this. Number 8, do not murder. Commandment number 9, 10 commandments, right? Do not murder. The way to happiness, commandment number 5, honor and help your parents. The Ten Commandments, number 5. Didn't even change the number on that one. You know, honor your father or mother. The way to happiness, number 13, do not steal. That sounds so familiar. Right? Commandment number 8, do not steal. There are things like this. Be temperate, set a good example. Don't do anything illegal, like me. Be competent, stuff like that. January 1st, 1982, you see this thing that's founded called the RTC, the Religious Technology Center. And what they do is they oversee and ensure the standard application of Scientology technology and trademarks. Basically, the RTC becomes the Church of Scientology. They own the names. They now own the trademark name L. Ron Hubbard. They own everything about Scientology. Now comes under the RTC. In 1983, a unanimous decision by the High Court of Australia recognized Scientology as a religion again in Australia. While claiming to be entirely divorced from Scientology management, Hubbard continued to draw from Scientology enterprises. Forbes magazine estimated at this time that he was worth at least $2 million gathered from stuff through Scientology in his name in 1982. January 4th, 1986, Hubbard dies from a stroke at his ranch at age 74. He leaves a $600 million estate behind. Scientology attorneys actually show up to claim his body because he wanted it cremated before anybody could check him out. They were blocked by the San Luis Obispo County medical examiner, who orders a drug toxicology report, and they find a drug called hydroxyzine in his system. It's used to treat anxiety. After the blood's taken, then they actually get to cremate him. Now, the Church of Scientology, what they say is that L. Ron Hubbard didn't really die. L. Ron Hubbard deliberately discarded his body to conduct research in spirit form and is now living on a planet a galaxy away. Nice. In 1987, David Miscavige, one of Hubbard's former personal assistants, assumed the position of chairman of the Religious Technology Center. Starting in 1991. Because it just doesn't end there. It keeps going. 1991, persons connected with Scientology filed 50 lawsuits against a group called the Cult Awareness Network. This is a group that was critical of Scientology, pointing out the different stuff they believe. And so Scientology went after them with a vengeance. None of the lawsuits stuck except for a couple, and it resulted in a $2 million judgment against this network. So they can't afford to operate anymore. In 1996, Stephen Hayes, a Scientologist, purchases the Cult Awareness Network logo, and now the Cult Awareness Network is set up with Scientology backing. Interesting, right? So, okay. 1993, a U.S. lawsuit was brought the Church of Scientology against a guy named Stephen Fishman, who was a former member of the church. And what happens is there are these operating thetan level 3 documents. And these are the really crazy ones of what L. Ron Hubbard bases all the other stuff and n-grams and thetans and e-monitors and all this stuff on that nobody gets to see until you become an OT3. He's in there, he leaves, he takes the documents, and he starts showing them to people. The church goes after him also with a vengeance. Today, you can sometimes Google, and every once in a while, you'll be able to find these OT3 documents, but anytime they go up anywhere, a lawsuit files the next day to get them removed so people cannot see these documents. There's a few places you can actually read some handwritten notes that he has. There's, I think, a place in Denmark that has some stuff up on the web that their courts have ruled that they didn't have to take down. But in every other country where this goes up, they sue to get it taken right back down because of how crazy it is. And yet they still believe it. I don't know why they just come out and go, yes, we believe this. We're going to save a whole bunch of money and stop suing people. But they don't. They keep suing people. Membership statistics. In 2005, Scientology stated that its worldwide membership at 8 million people. And at that time, that actually just included the people who even took the introductory course. Like they show up for like the personality test. Oh, great. We'll check you on our list. You're a member. Okay. In 2007, though, a church official claimed that 3.5 million members were in the United States. According to a 2001 survey, though, published by the City University of New York, only 55,000 people in the United States, when asked to identify their religion, would actually say Scientology as the religion. Now, Scientologists would also disparage that and say, well, you know, surveys don't really reflect what people actually believe. You know, they won't want to say it because their cultural standards won't let them say they're Scientologists and stuff like that. Today, Scientology operates a bunch of churches, but also operates eight churches that are designated as celebrity centers, the largest of these being in Hollywood, obviously. Celebrity centers, they're open to the general public, but they're designed more for celebrity Scientologists. So entertainers like John Travolta, Christy Alley, Lisa Marie Presley, Nancy Cartwright, Jason Lee, Isaac Hayes, Tom Cruise, Chick Corea, Katie Holmes, Beck, Jenna Elfman, Juliette Lewis, Giovanni Ribisi, Jerry Seinfeld toyed with it a while, but he didn't actually stay. The largest donor last year to the Church of Scientology was Nancy Cartwright. You know this? Voice of Bart Simpson. $10 million, Church of Scientology. Okay, so their beliefs. Here we go. They are called an applied religious philosophy. Scientology tries to focus on psychological technologies to help people live better lives. They say Scientology is focused upon humanity. In the end, really what Scientology does is it sees itself as the answer or man as the answer. You know, one of the things that you can always note about false religions is that it's always about man. If you do it right and you do it the right way, then you get it figured out. Yes, you are the answer. Man is the answer. The problem in the world is everybody's messed up, but the answer is still man. Even though man has messed it all up, you're still the answer. You're not the answer, okay? We're the ones who messed up. Jesus is the answer. That's how that works. So Dianetics uses canceling techniques known as auditing, and this enables you to recall your past traumatic experiences. Did I put it in this one or put it later? Oh, I put it later. I remember. It's in the reactive mind. Okay, so beliefs and practices. That's the next one. Oh, body and spirit. Okay. Scientology claims that its belief practices are based upon rigorous research and its doctrines are accorded a significant equivalent to that of scientific laws. They actually say Scientology works 100% of the time when it's properly applied to a person who sincerely desires to improve his life. And so body and spirit, Scientology has an associated, I would say, mythology that its adherents hold to that can reflect religious truth. This revolves around, this idea of the thetan. The thetan comes from the Greek letter theta, and this is the individualized expression of the cosmic force. A thetan is thought to be the true identity of a person. You are intrinsically good as a thetan. You're omniscient, which is always nice. As a thetan, and you have a non-material core that's capable of unlimited creativity. In the primordial past, according to Scientologist teachings, thetans brought the material universe into being for their own pleasure. So they, you know, they think about stuff and they bring that into being. This is actually like a lot of Eastern religions as well. The universe is thought to have no independent reality of its own, but derives its apparent reality from the fact that most thetans agree it exists. Okay. Do you follow that? The physical reality is here because most thetans agree that it exists. Okay, so it's really a construct of the mind. Eventually, Thetans lost their memory of their true nature, along with the associated spiritual and creative powers, and as a result, they found themselves embodied within people. Thetans are believed to be reborn time and time again in bodies through a process that's actually called assumption, which is kind of just like reincarnation. Okay, so emotions and the mind. Scientology, they present two major divisions of somebody's mind. And this is kind of how we start getting into what they do. They have what's called the reactive mind. The reactive mind, and it's thought to absorb all the pain and emotional trauma. And then there's the analytical mind, or the rational mechanism for all this consciousness. The reactive mind, what it does is it stores all these mental images, and they refer to these things as engrams. All these things are unavailable to the analytical mind. Engrams are believed to be painful and debilitating as they accumulate, and they pull you away from your true identity. It works like this. Do the pictures right here? Okay. So imagine you are having an operation, okay? And, you know, your analytical mind, you're asleep, but your reactive mind is always awake, okay? So your reactive mind sees the thing taking place, and say they're cutting open your stomach and they're looking at you like, oh, this is really bad, his stomach's messed up, oh my goodness, surgery gets done, you're patched up, you're all better. Then maybe a couple days later, you're walking around and your stomach hurts like this. You go, oh, why does my stomach hurt? That's the engram that was placed in your reactive mind while your analytical mind was asleep. And so what Scientology wants to do is they want to be able to get rid of all those engrams that you have accumulated. And some of these things that you have accumulated as engrams aren't even things that you have done. They are things that thetans who have taken up residence in your body have done to you. They're their memories and not actually yours. So you got to get rid of all these other thetans that, it's not just you, but all the other thetans as well. So when you get rid of all those, you can become clear of all the thetans. That's, you're like, wow! And it doesn't just start with $240, okay? All right. So the training tool that they use to get you towards this clear state starts with that the E-meter. You get gradual freedom from all these engrams. And so Scientology, what they do when you first come in, and I put this in here, it goes over two pages, but it's called the tone. When you first walk in, you do that personality test. They figure out where you're at and put you on this tone scale. This is the tone scale right here. So when you come in, they'll figure out where you're at based upon that tone scale, and that starts with your counseling. Now, the operating three thetan level documents, what do they tell you about how all this took place and why do you have these engrams stuck in your body? I will show you the video clip. This is great.
We want to reveal to Stan the great secret of life behind our church, the safely guarded Scientology doctrine. Please, your son deserves to be enlightened. Stan, do you want to hear the great secret doctrine of life behind Scientology?
Sure.
All right, go ahead and tell him. Would you excuse us, please? This is highly classified church information. Oh, rats. Usually, to hear the secret doctrine, you have to be in the church for several years, Stan. Are you ready to hear the truth?
I guess.
You see, Stan, there is a reason for people feeling sad and depressed. An alien reason. It all began 75 million years ago. Back then, there was a galactic federation of planets, which was ruled over by the evil Lord Xenu. Xenu thought his galaxy was overpopulated, and so he rounded up countless aliens from all different planets, and then had those aliens frozen. The frozen alien bodies were loaded onto Xenu's galactic cruisers, which looked like DC-8s, except with rocket engines. The cruisers then took the frozen alien bodies to our planet, Earth, and dumped them into the volcanoes of Hawaii. The aliens were no longer frozen. They were dead. The souls of those aliens, however, lived on and all floated up towards the sky. But the evil Lord Xenu had prepared for this. Xenu didn't want their souls to return, and so he built giant soul catchers in the sky. The souls were taken to a huge soul brainwashing facility, which Xenu had also built on Earth. there, the souls were forced to watch days of brainwashing material, which tricked them into believing a false reality. Xenu then released the alien souls, which roamed the Earth aimlessly in a fog of confusion. At the dawn of man, the souls finally found bodies which they could grab onto. They attached themselves to all mankind, which still to this day causes all our fears, our confusions, and our problems.
They actually, in the Operator 3, they actually like DC-8s, but with rocket engines. And actually, they stack them around volcanoes. It doesn't say Hawaii, but it says around volcanoes by the billions. And then they set off H-bombs in these volcanoes. And so everybody has a soul called a Thetan. They send them to these rehabilitation centers. All these Thetans have to watch these movies about all this stuff. And so now everybody today has these clusters called body thetans that we are stuck with. And if you're to be a free soul, you have to remove all of these body thetans and pay lots of money to actually do so. The only reason that people we believe in God or Jesus Christ is because it was in the film 75 million years ago, is what they will say. These events are actually known as Incident 2 or the Firewall. These are traumatic memories associated with the R6 implant, is what L. Ron Hubbard likes to call it. In 1967, L. Ron Hubbard famously warned that it is calculated to kill by pneumonia or et cetera anyone who attempts to solve the R6 implant. The R6 implant is the reason for Christianity, according to Scientology. That trapped thetans were shown films of the crucifixion, and Hubbard taught that the effects of the R6 implant today on society is to make us feel irrationally sympathetic towards the crucifixion of Christ, and this sympathy makes us predisposed towards Christianity. Hubbard actually implies that Xenu's brainwashing of people to be sympathetic towards crucified Christ is a manipulation and control process, and that being a Christian, you're not actually free. You're still under Xenu's devious plan to be caught. Actually, what happens, like, well, in the Operating 3 documents is after this happens, these other people rise up and Xenu is now locked away in a planet somewhere far away, like that. So Scientology, they are the only ones who can actually free people, the poor, the brainwashed, the looted, and these trapped Christians to become great and powerful, free, operating Thetan Scientologists. Scientologists, include a belief in God, but offers no details or doctrines about who he is. Human nature. L. Ron Hubbard concluded that the human mind is made up of three parts, the body, the mind, and the thetan. Okay? The body includes the brain, which is not to be confused with the mind. The purpose of the brain is to carry messages like a switchboard. The mind consists essentially of pictures. It's an accumulation of life experiences, memories, perceptions, decisions, and conclusions. And the thetan is your soul. It's the essence of a human being. The thetan can exist entirely independent of the body, okay? So if you can become clear, you get rid of all these things that are holding you down, and Scientology teaches that through a process called exteriorization, a thetan can leave the body but still control the body. Oh, what is that? I'm like, I didn't have another clip, did I? the experience results when a person is... that he is no longer identified with his body because thetans just inhabit bodies. They don't actually have bodies. You know, they're spiritual kind of souls that run around. And a person who is able to practice exteriorization is called an operating thetan because now they can actually operate as they were meant to operate. Did I put the afterlife thing in there? Yeah. Afterlife. Scientology, actually, they don't have a standardized view of the afterlife, so... I'm going to say about that. They have a thing called eight dynamics, and the eight dynamics, again, all deal with the idea of survive. Eight dynamics are, number one, self, the urge to survive as an individual. Two, creativity, the urge to survive through family. Three, group survival, the urge to survive through a group such as a nation, team, or community, race, etc. Number four, species, the urge to survive through the survival of the human species. Five, life forms, the urge for life itself. Six, physical universe, the urge of the universe to survive. Seven, spiritual dynamic, the urge for the survival of the life force. And eight, infinity, the urge to exist as infinity or God. L. Ron Hubbard also wrote some stuff called the axioms. Hubbard's work for Scientology, seriously, it was recorded 500,000 pages of writing he did for Scientology, 6,500 reels of tape, and 42 films. And this also includes all these auditing procedures, training procedures, administration of Scientology facilities. I actually put a link to a PDF. If you want to look at the axioms online, you can look at those. Okay. I'll give you some quotes of L. Ron. Actually, I'll try this. He was trying to discredit psychiatrists because, you know, his thing is how you fix the mind, not psychiatry. This is actually what he said in Project Psychiatry, February 22nd, 1966. And it's written terribly, but okay. A psychiatrist today has the power to, one, take a fancy to a woman. Two, lead her to take wild treatment as a joke. Three, drug and shock her to temporary insanity. Four, incarcerate, well, I think it says incarcerate, but he didn't spell it right. Incarcerate her. Five, use her sexually. Six, sterilize her to prevent conception. Seven, kill her brain by operating to prevent disclosure, and with no fear of reprisal. Yet it is rape and murder. We want at least one bad mark on every psychiatrist in England. A murder, an assault, or a rape, or more than one. This is Project Psychiatry. We will remove them. So these are like operating instructions to his people in England of what they're supposed to do to psychiatrists. Here's some quotes. L. Ron Hubbard in 1949 says, "I'd like to start a religion. That's where the money is." Obviously so. 1950, he says, "Let's sell these people a piece of blue sky." This is after he opens the Dianetic Research Foundation in 1950. In the book All About Radiation I talked to you about before, he writes this: "Scientology is the only specific cure for radiation or atomic bombs burns." Okay, it's nice. You got it. Okay. Radiation is apparently enormously water-soluble as well as water-removable. According to researchers, one merely has to take a hose to a building surface or a road to wash the radiation off it. I'm so glad we know that now, because when things melt down, like, what do you do? Oh, here comes an atomic bomb. Get out your hoses. We'll just keep it away. This factor is well known to the defense of trained personnel. Scientific American magazine, writing about the Dianetics book, said, "This volume probably contains more promises and less evidence per page than has any publication since the invention of printing." L. Ron Hubbard in Science of Survival said, "The sudden and abrupt deletion of individuals occupying the lower bands of the tone scale," okay, so the tone scale that I showed you, this is usually what he refers to as like 2.0 or lower, "from the social order," so getting rid of them, "would result in an almost instant rise in the cultural tone and would interrupt the dwindling spiral into which any society may have entered." So if you get rid of these people, you'll all be better off. In Ron's journal, 1967, he wrote, "In all the broad universe, there is no other hope for man than ourselves." Again, who's it about? Man. In the Journal of Scientology, 18G, he says, "The only way you can control people is to lie to them." You can write that down in your book in great big letters. The only way you control anybody is to lie to them. In the Journal of Scientology, issue 15G in 1953, he says, "Leukemia is evidently psychosomatic in origin." I'm glad all the poor old kids with leukemia know that. "And at least 8 cases of leukemia have been treated successfully by Dianetics after medicine had traditionally given up. The source of leukemia has been reported to be an engram containing the phrase, 'It turns my blood to water.'" In Control of Hysteria, April 15, 1957, he says, "Now we say there's, well, another place in the world, there's India. Wonderful place, except for the people." Yeah. He said some other derogatory comments about the Chinese and about African Americans and stuff like that as well. All right. That's my 45 minutes. Questions? Yes. Because they don't tell you. They don't tell you until you're operating level 3 thetan of.
But even going in on an introductory level, I mean, to accept it as a religion, what are they actually meddling?
Why do people buy that? That's the question. Oh. You're welcome. Seriously, I even had someone else say it to me this week. They go, "Repeat the question." People are looking for something. I know some people who pick up the book Dianetics, they read it and like, oh, you know, I've got these past traumatic experiences. If I just got rid of those, I'd be clear, I'd be okay. And that's what they do. I mean, you go up to these people and it's like, what's your personality? Oh, let's do the personality test. Let's figure out where you're at. You know, at first it all sounds very reasonable. I mean, it's not like they're going up like, hey, we're crazy people who believe in Xenu. How many thetans you got? What does that mean? You know, they don't do that. You start with this thing as being something that could potentially help you. You know, I'm depressed. I got these issues. How do I get past these issues? And they're like, well, this is how you get past those issues. And they try and help, not realizing that man is not the answer. I mean, the farther you spiral into man trying to be the answer, the worse things are going to get. That's why I think all these things about, you know, self-help and self-esteem, they're just terrible. Because we're the problem. The more we look at ourselves, the worse we're going to feel because we're terrible. That's why we need to stop looking at ourselves and look at Jesus.
So they're peddling personal happiness,
yes,
through controlling your...
Yeah, getting rid of your past traumatic experience, engrams. Yes. It's like the least amount of questions I've had of any... Yes.
When they said if you get rid of these 2.0 and below people at the bottom of the scale, what are those?
Look, there's literally like 40 things under 2.0.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Print them out. I'll give you one. I'll give you my notes. Means you're dead, John. John was told he was a 1.1. Did you pay any money to him? Okay. Just check. Yeah, that's why you're 1.1, dude. Seriously, pay him some money. 2.0... Hostility, under 2.0, hostility, pain, anger, hate, resentment, no sympathy, unexpressed resentment, covert hostility, anxiety, fear, despair, terror, numb, sympathy, propitiation, grief, making amends, undeserved. Yeah. There you go. Right, you got to keep going. You go to keep going to the auditings. You keep getting more and more your thetans removed till you can move farther up. John Travolta's wife is like a level 7 or something. Because she can afford to be. The only person I think who reached level 9, I think it was L. Ron Hubbard. He said he was level 9. Yeah. Drugs will do that to you.
Do they have church services?
I don't know.
Repeat the question.
Do they have church services? Do you know that?
I was looking at this.
That's not the tone scale.
Yeah, this masturbation training.
Yeah, this is like when, you know, people start, you're grade 0, get up, and then you're here, you're clear. This costs a lot of money to get there. Yeah. Did anybody look at that when you got it? I had a friend who went down and got it for me. One day he was down, he's like, oh, I'll just stop in and grab one. And they gave it to him, didn't even pay him, charge for it.
Is there a difference between Christian Scientology and Christian Science?
Yes, yes. Yeah, we're going to talk about Christian Science next week.
A
lot of it both has to do with the mind, but massive difference, massive difference. They're both crazy, but massive difference. Anybody else? Do you have something, James? Okay. Yes?
So, way of understanding, these thetans never die.
No, yeah, they're immortal.
So, if our body dies, the thetans,
yeah,
that's it.
He'll attach to somebody else, or she. Your thetan doesn't die. What happens when you die? Your thetan doesn't die. The thetans, like if you have a bunch of them clustered inside of you, yeah, they may all just take off and go somewhere else. But see, all the things that you have now gone through in your life, like all the say you're riding your motorcycle on a Saturday and you wreck your motorcycle and you're in the hospital and then all of a sudden one day you die. Those engrams of you wrecking your motorcycle are now attached to every single one of those thetans inside of your body. And so when you die and they take off and go somewhere else, like say, you know, 2 go over here and 100 go this way and whatever, whoever they attach to now have that negative engram attached to them, and that's something else that the next person has to get rid of as well.
So does that mean they're going to get in a motorcycle accident too?
Yeah. It means that you know, they may look at, they may be scared. It means they may be scared of a highway, or they may be scared of blacktop. Or why are you scared of blacktop? I don't know. Well, maybe at one point a thetan was on a motorcycle with Connie and they wrecked and now that's stuck inside of you, and now you're scared of luck. But basically, that's all the fears, all the issues that you have are because some thetan somewhere has done something that has put that engram inside of you. Fear of public speaking is the number one fear in America. Apparently, a lot of thetans died public speaking or something. It says everybody's stuck with it. I don't know what the deal is. Yeah, well, but if you get rid of all of them and one is left, that would be you. You would be the operating thetan at that point, the only one that's in your body. That's the point of Scientology, to get rid of all of the thetans. You're like going, what? Because, well, in their thought, a thetan is who you are. Because if you can get rid of all the other thetans and the main one that is you just stays in that body, then you can become clear of the other ones and you can become an operating thetan. You can start to operate like you were meant to operate.
So all the thetans that you want to get rid of go and attach themselves
to other people. Yeah. Yeah, because honestly, there's billions and billions of these. There's yeah. I think, yeah, actually here, let me look at this real quick and I'll tell you how. Hey, hold on. Let me find this. Yeah, you want my thetan? I'll trade thetans. My mom packed this one for me today when I went to school. Hold on. This is the problem with 18 pages of notes. Okay, here you go. Let's see. 700 million years ago, Xenu, Earth was originally called Tegeac. Xenu, 76 planets he controlled were overpopulated. Each planet had an average of 178 billion people on it. Okay? So if he goes and he takes these 178 billion, the majority of them off of all of these planets are overpopulated. I mean, that's trillions of thetans that are now stuck here. Yes. It's not PMS, it's thetans. Boy, that should be like the quote of the class. It's not PMS, it's a thetan. Next time she gets it, just be all, hey, are you clear yet? You need to be clear.
What's the average education of these people? What level?
There's a lot of educated people in Scientology.
You can be educated and still be wrong.
Yeah, and apparently you can be really rich. Yes. L. Ron Hubbard. Who decided it should be a religion? L. Ron Hubbard, originally he kept saying that he didn't want it to be a religion. He wanted it to be an alternative to psychology, to psychotherapy. But apparently he realized you can make more money as a religion. So. Well, there is and there isn't. They don't have an official statement on the afterlife. The afterlife would be your thetans leaving you, going to somebody else. You're not going to remember that you're you. So essentially, you're gone. But if you can get to operating thetan level and you can remember who you are, then you could go in at one point and discard your body, like L. Ron Hubbard in a haze of drugs. You can discard your body and then be an operating thetan. An operating thetan doesn't need their body anymore. They can just discard it. You're like, oh, that's what I need. Yes?
Have you ever, in your studies, obviously, you did quite a bit of it, have you ever seen any beneficial side to it at all? Or something you say, you know, this?
I think that is the reason why Scientology is still around. Because it's, honestly, we are all people who have issues of traumatic experiences that have happened to us that we let rule our lives. You know, and in Scientology, the answer is figuring that out and working through it and getting rid of that. When for Christianity, the answer is Jesus. You know, for them, it's you figuring out and forcing through it and getting rid of this thetan and not. And then when you realize, oh, I'm afraid of this, you're like, oh, I'm not afraid of that. That thetan's afraid of that. I'm not going to give into that. You know, it helps people, and that's why it's still around. I mean, if it didn't, well, there's much that doesn't still around. But you know. So yeah, I think there are people that find it helpful. They tell their friends, you know, spend your money, get on your little e-meter. They now have a USB version, by the way, that's coming out now. It's getting trademarked. You can go online and actually download the schematic and build your own e-meter if you want to. A couple Campbell's cans, some wires, you're good to go. Okay, I'm going to break you into groups of five or six, and I'll give you your questions. Hands up, everybody. Meet some people. Pray for each other before they leave.